All right, I'm here with Tyler. Hello, Tyler.
How's it going?
Chapter 10 is what's on the menu.
Yeah. Shall I begin?
You shall begin.
All right. No. I can't freaking believe this. Chris had been so sure that Mr. Madero was a virgin. The expression on Mr. Madero's face was burned into Chris's memory, like a forget-me-not bouquet from Lindy. What the fuck was that? Lindy gimmied. The two siblings suddenly stopped being silly. Chris grabbed Mr. Madero, uncoupling the two desiring dummies. It was like separating two kids from their Slim Jims. Chris gave Mr. Madero to Lindy and examined him curiously, looking for his penis. But it had vanished faster than their parents' incessant babbling. After he got the dummy dressed, Chris gave his camel a back rub. His beloved pet was pale and as tense as if he'd just seen two dolls fucking. Lindy was grouchy and didn't notice that she had pissed on Palm of Oil shoes. She was an edgy comedian and an honor student, but the sight of two dummies in a steamy clench had her thinking suicide. Chris, what have you been teaching Mr. Madero? Lindy whispered. Say what, you? Was Chris's fake surprise reaction. Look, what I want to tell you is that this is as close as Palm of Oil and I have been, and if you think that you and your dummy are going to fuck that up, Lindy started to say. Oi, just one momentito, Chris replied, airing out his voice, reaching for new heights and then tumbling down some old ones. Lindy looked at her brother, feeling the bumps on his head. After wiping the smirk from her face and suspenders, she said, I didn't intend for this to happen. I introduced them, but I thought they'd just be friends. Now look at Palm of Oil. Her self-esteem has been destroyed. Even though his shoes were extremely silly, as was his zoot suit, Mr. Madero was actually pretty suave, as long as you treated him like a baby. If you even raise your hand to him, he would demand Lunchables and not touch the cheese sandwich you just made for him. Chris had heard what her sister was saying. All right. The total pariah said, your dummy is diabolical. What did you just say? Chris had missed his exit. Nothing, Lindy replied, totally freestyling the sarcasm. I'm a little sure that I said something, but I'm not sure that what I said was what I'm sure of, Lindy confessed as the sun turned red in the sky and she tried to see the whites in Chris's eyes. Me too, Chris admirably said. I may be ugly, but at least I don't pass gas and blame Mom. Lindy was really bad about passing the buck on passing gas. If she couldn't blame Palm of Oil or Chris's camel, she blamed it on the rats that she was sure had begun to infest their house. Yeah, I believe that we must act decisively, Lindy replied. It's what makes us all lunatic nutcases. Their mom was chilling on Chris's camel, reading Stephen King. Their house was obscure, which was an exception to what it usually was, and that was wrapped in yellow police caution tape with green laser beams forming triangles that hovered above it. Mrs. Powell would superstitiously throw salt on the lawn whenever her two children appeared with a media in tow. Hey, check it out. This book's as lame and predictable as our house is obscure and wrapped in plastic. Who are you talking to? Chris asked, meaning to be an asshole in a voice that only a penis could decipher. She's reading that macabre shit that blows and blows yet again, and that was Lindy. Mrs. Powell boasted that she had stolen the book. What do you think of that? You're as fucked up as Mr. Madero, Chris said, and he's not even a real part of this cozy existence. Huh? Mrs. Powell's eyes did a 360. She had served up her criminality on a plate, and no one was eating off of it. And if you try to strangle Palm of Oil again, Lindy informed her mother, you'll be digging your own grave right before I throw your limp and lifeless... You ungrateful bastard! Mrs. Powell was in a foul mood, and she lifted her hand toward her eldest child. You're all bastards! But Mommy, Chris said, pulling out his Pez dispenser. Get me my tranquilizers, kids! Their fatigued and less emphatic mom said, I'm going to sign myself into a petri dish land. Not out loud, though, please. Lindy interrupted with a news bulletin. I have to, Mrs. Powell said, when she meant to snort. You have to completely hasten my early demise with this ventriloquist dummies of yours? Mom, for Christ's sake, I want to be a parent again, Mrs. Powell insisted, and she didn't care if the King novel was a mess of cheap scares and outright cliches. And I'm not digging my own grave. And I don't want to hear a peep out of either of your jackass dummies. If there are problems, I want them resolved before I die. Mom, listen, you're being a real... And
resolve any capricious comedy immediately, then I'm killing the dummies. I know what you're thinking. Mrs. Powell was tired, and her love light had long gone out. It's been real, she said. The kids had no remedy for what ailed them. They fumed in silence and poured themselves into the corridor. Chris tied tubered roses around the entrance to his room. He was so tired that he was going to ask Mr. Madero to strangle Palmavoil. He had almost stopped breathing when he saw the two dummies toe-to-toe doing the talcum powder shuffle. Mom's not much of a reader, Lindy said sacrilegiously, turning her eyes and her nose up. And there was Palmavoil, sitting on the windowsill, smoking a cigarette. I think I'm asleep, and this is all going on with my eyes closed, Chris reasoned with the reason of Republicans. Chris then saw Mr. Madero, and he was sad, but by the look of his pants, still rigid. Hey, Chris thought. When I looked, he was dull as a butter knife. You know what? I'm going to take Mr. Madero down to the armoire and machine gun 10 bullets into him, Chris said thoughtfully. Good idea, Lindy said, petting Chris's camel. But if you get one hole in the armoire, Mom will kill you. What's an armoire? Chris looked at his dummy and felt remorse. He couldn't understand what had provoked such a violent reaction in him. What could it have been? Oh yeah, the two dummies on his cello, flailing at each other like Jerry Springer guests. But when he looked at Mr. Madero, he could only see his pint-sized eyes, his morbid insensitivity, and his sinful life. Chris was not without sin, so help him, Medea. Just one more time. One more time and that jackass is firewood. He took Mr. Madero to the armoire. Later, with a grunt, he'd take Mr. Madero and pour Noxzema into his head and shake him until he was instantly taller. Chris slammed Mr. Madero's head repeatedly into the armoire door until he heard a click. Then he turned him over and slammed his head some more. Half dead and seemingly tranquil, Mr. Madero sensed that Chris was a little perturbed. He was wrinkling his shirt and rolling his eyes in what seemed like brazen drunkenness. And then Chris cut off circulation to his Yago Sangria. Actually, other than tearing up his Zafu pillow, nothing really got to Mr. Madero. He was, however, desperate, temper tantrum prone, banal, and somnambulant. If he could just open the window, he'd be okay. The house was calm, like a humidor is calm, and a humidor is not calm. Fatigued and kind of quiet, maybe, but not calm, and certainly not tired and ready to fall asleep. Perhaps the house spoke too soon. Its eyes were heavy. They looked like two clarinets sitting silly in front of open windows. And there was Palmavoil, sitting exactly where Lindy had left her, head first in the trash can. So let's see what we've learned in this chapter. Mr. Madero, with the brazenness of a red-headed stepchild, laid wood to Palmavoil. We learned what a right dumbass Chris is. And we learned that if you juggle all these elements, you'll have an extraordinarily upsetting experience.
Tyler, thank you.
No problem.